Welcome to the Finclusive Podcast, where we believe investing in diversity is not just good for society, but a competitive advantage that impact and return are not mutually exclusive. We talk with underestimated founders and funders on how they're creating new markets around the world.
Hey guys, thanks for joining. Hey Kelly.
Hi.
Looks like we have Manon on as well.
Yes, we're all here.
Good to be here. How are you ladies?
Great.
So I'm going to let Manon to like maybe give a bit of a background of what he's done, how he got into VC.
Yeah, happy to do that. And it's great to be here. I think you accurately said, Kelly, that, you know, Unshackled Ventures is a venture fund specifically designed for immigrant entrepreneurs. And I think more broadly, that's teams with one or more immigrant entrepreneurs. I think from a kind of a high level, the first thing is to define immigrant in our eyes, and that is someone that's not born here or could be the kid of immigrants. The three things that we really focus on at Unshackled is, number one, trying to be the friends and family round of capital for immigrants. We recognize not everyone has access to friends and family money. As somebody who's native born to Silicon Valley, I can appreciate that that is something that some people do have here in Silicon Valley, but many from around the world do not have. And it's critically important that we provide that. The second thing, as you also talked about, Kelly, is we provide full immigration support. And that can take on the form of anywhere from work authorization to your green card. We do that as part of our investment. There's no cost to it when we do it. And so the fund pays all the legal fees for the entirety of the journey. So if you want to just secure work authorization and stop there, that is fine. But if you want to secure work authorization, let's say an H-1B, and then you want to go get your O-1 visa and then finally your green card at some point and citizenship, we will support you all the way through. And the third thing that we do, which is probably more generic in the venture landscape, is really trying to connect our immigrant founders with the right resources and network. We're pretty big believers that the difference between success and failure for many people is not what they know, it's who they know and when. And by definition, you know, many immigrants have much shallower networks. And that's not because of a lack of hustle and drive, it's just a lack of a number of years in the US. And so those are the three pillars that we really focus on. I should note that we are very high conviction investors. What I mean by that is we don't really wait for other people to come in to invest. We have led rounds in nearly 80% of our portfolio companies. And we've been investing since 2015. We have raised two funds, manage about $30 million, and have made 55 investments to date. I will stop there. I think you also, sorry, you asked about my pathway into venture.
Yes.
You know, it's a bit circuitous, candidly. I don't come from a venture background. As I mentioned, I'm born and raised in Silicon Valley, as the son of immigrants that came to the US in the 70s. And my education was in engineering and econ. Then I did investment banking for a number of years. And then I ran marketing for an education technology company. It was in those experiences that I kept on finding myself working with immigrant entrepreneurs. And when I decided to start my first business, it was with somebody who was on an H-1B visa. And little did I know that his H-1B visa would make it challenging for him to quit his daytime job and work on our business full time. And that's when, you know, you start to go to co-working spaces, moonlighting on your business, and you quickly realize there's a lot of people like us who are either the immigrant or a co-founder of an immigrant who can't leave their job. And so Unshackled was really born out of a personal problem. And I teamed up with Nitin and then shortly thereafter, Maria, to build the firm.
That's amazing. Our previous tagline was really to invest in female and immigrant founders, because we really see, we don't see diversity as a charity case, I guess. We just see that immigrants are more gritty, right? So what is something that's unique within, that you see in immigrant founders that's different from other founders, you think?
You know, I think it's something that goes down into this idea of distance traveled and in adversity muscle. So distance traveled, not so much in the form of miles, but the pathway that many immigrants have had to take in their lives. We have founders who came from coconut farms, and they're the first in their family to ever go to college or didn't even go to college, and found their way to the U.S. We have founders that grew up in slums around the world, and education was their only way out. And so one of the elements of being an immigrant, whether by force or by choice, you left your home country. And at the margin, I would argue that's more entrepreneurial than somebody native born. And so when you couple that with this idea of an adversity muscle, building a startup is probably one of the hardest things and journeys many people will go under and go on. And so there's simply just more things that go wrong than go right in building a company. And so if you develop this idea of an adversity muscle to tolerate the hard and keep on persisting through it, I think you have, you know, one of the key recipes or ingredients to be a successful entrepreneur. And you know, those are the things that we really look for. We really try to understand what is the motivation, what is the chip on the shoulder, and what happens if we can match that aspiration to be an entrepreneur with the inspiration of now being able to do it.
That's pretty awesome. And really curious, how have you seen this play out, against other DEI funds, because it's obviously something that has been growing over time. And how have you guys kept competitive in your deal flows?
It's a really great question. You know, honestly, one of the philosophies we've had from the very beginning of Unshackled back in 2015 is to ensure that our front door was larger than our back door. And what I mean by that is the ways to get to us are equal, they're democratized, and anyone, warm or cold, will have the fair same chance as anyone who may have a connection to us. And so, you know, what that really means is if you go to our website, every single deal that we look at starts with a form on our website that the founders can pick, fill out themselves. And what that means is that at least three people from our team will look at it within 10 days. And what that has allowed us to do is not fall prey to a lot of the pattern recognition behaviors that networks create, but rather keep our eyes open. And I think by virtue of doing that, you know, when I think about DE&I, you know, having a female partner is really important. The rest of our team is three other women. You know, when you look at the portfolio, nearly 40% of our founders are now, or founding teams, have a female founder on it. We have a number of Black and Brown founders on our team. And I think it goes back to this idea of how do you ensure the front door is larger than the back door? And then hopefully more people want to walk through it and they feel as if they get a fair shot.
Love that. With that mission in mind, that was really like, was it from day one or day zero that you already have that mission? And how was it like to raise a fund like this? Because I don't know of any other fund that's like, oh, immigrants, that is our differentiator, right? We're going to invest in immigrants. So how was it like to form your first fund back then?
Yeah, so it's actually really interesting to think about it back in 2014 and 15 when we were fundraising. I think it should be noted that immigrants have been successful entrepreneurs in the U.S. for as far back as this country has been around. Immigrants are at companies that we all know of. We know they're extremely successful. And so some of the challenge initially was people asking us, don't immigrants already find a way? To that, I said, you know, what you're effectively saying is the best will find a way. And our job as investors is to help more people be the best, not rely upon other people's validation, and to help create entrepreneurs. And so from the very beginning, we saw an opportunity that was unique to not compete against every VC for the same pie that already existed, but ask ourselves, how do we grow this pie size, right? And instead of taking a sliver, grow it larger and then own that part. And then over time, let the other VCs after us try to take a sliver of our larger pie. And so from the very beginning, we've been really adamant about having a very, very wide aperture on helping entrepreneurs, specifically immigrant entrepreneurs. And a big part of that is also when we invest, right? So for context as well, 60% of our commitments have been either before or alongside the company's incorporation. So our product market fit is at this intersection of ideation that somebody has. They are maybe limited by immigration. They don't know if they are yet, and they don't know the right people. So if we can answer all three of those questions for an entrepreneur, we will grow the size of the pie. And that's been something from the very beginning, given the fact that both my co-founder and I had to shut down our companies because of this challenge, we have not wavered from at all.
That's pretty awesome. It's something I personally face, having been at a larger company where we, even though we're global, we face those same visa challenges and we see so much talent slip away. Has there been, in your opinion, any sort of reverse immigration effect from COVID or, you know, the recent years? Or has it been pretty steady in your opinion?
For us, it's probably grown over the course of our journey, right? When I think it's important to put a backdrop beyond COVID. You know, when we started this fund, it was an Obama presidency in the United States. For 4 years of it, it was a Trump presidency. And now for about 70 days, it's a Biden presidency. These are very different administrations. And as we kind of went through three different versions of policy around immigration, what we've just simply seen is just more and more demand for this type of funding. And that could be because, you know, our name is getting out there a little bit more. People are more aware of us. More people are starting companies and think they can start them now. But it could also be that for 4 years, it was a pretty toxic environment, right? It was very anti-immigrant, at least in rhetoric. Policy was, you know, up and down a lot, but the rhetoric was consistently anti-immigrant. And for those 4 years of the Trump presidency administration, we just kept on getting the job done, right? We kept on working, we kept on investing, we kept on sponsoring visas, and we showed people a way to do it. And so in a weird way, that those 4 years served as a tailwind. And our deal flow has just grown dramatically, where now, you know, we actually run into a scale problem. Like, we see about 1,800 deals a year. We only invest in about 14 to 15 of them. And so we now have another problem, which is how do we meet the demand in the market?
Yeah, so how do you collaborate with other VCs to kind of help your scale problem? How do you envision yourself trying to solve this scaling issues with like reviewing all the deals?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's a credit to our team internally. A lot of that scale comes from internal operations. For those that know the team a little bit, it's pretty strong. It's very strong in terms of operations and discipline and collaboration. I think that's been the biggest thing that we've done is we've tried to build a playbook for scale where we're not overwhelmed by volume. And I think that's important from a customer service perspective as well, right? If people know that we see thousands of deals a year, it can easily make them think that they don't have a larger front door to go through. They have to find a back door to get through the noise. But rather what we focused on is to ensure that they don't feel like they need to get a back door and get some privileged access to us is to make sure that our process is so robust that everyone gets a fair share. And so much of this is designed by the team at Unshackled, and it's allowed us to be really prompt to the point where we try to make investment decisions in 3 meetings in 2 hours of total founder time so that the founders can get back to work. We get back to founders within 10 days of them filling out our online form. And what that also allows us to do is be very responsive to other VCs when they are sending us deal flow, right? So if you're a seed investor and you see someone's on a visa, you may ask Unshackled to take a look at it. We will still look at it the exact same way and be exact same way responsive to that VC. Ultimately, we look at this as being a big tent opportunity, right? Where we will invest as early as we possibly can. But we are also dependent on seed investors, Series A investors, Series B investors, to continually invest in our founders. And so we try to be as collaborative, but it all starts with us building Unshackled in such a way that we can scale internally and not be reliant upon anyone else.
So how early is early? I think you mentioned something about day zero. What's like the earliest investment that you invested in?
The earliest investment is someone with 3 ideas still, and still tinkering around with customer validation. We aren't afraid of, you know, again, I'll put this in context. Oftentimes, if you are a aspiring entrepreneur, you're currently on a work visa, working somewhere else. Let's say you're working at Clubhouse, or you're working at Facebook or Google. You probably are only committing your time nights and weekends to your idea. And that's where we want to meet you. We want to meet you at that stage, help you through thinking through the customer validation journey, and then telling you that if we invest in you, you can transfer your visa, you can stay work authorized, and now build your company. So that is our sweet spot, right? As I mentioned earlier, 60% of our commits are alongside or before the incorporation of a business. And that's where we see kind of this unique opportunity to be the friends and family around, fully expecting, just as if you have any friends and family that would invest in you, I think they all kind of know in the back of their mind that your idea is going to change a few times, but they're underwriting you. That's the same way we approach every investment, that we're pretty confident that the idea could change. Will it or not, we don't know. But if it does, we're confident we can still support you through that iteration. And so much of our team is built for that.
So it's often said that LPs, right, your investors of your fund, they typically drive your investment strategy. So I'm really curious, how did you, when you went through your first and second fundraising efforts, how'd you position this and how'd you get folks on board?
So our LPs, we're very fortunate where our LPs really have entrusted us to articulate a strategy that made sense for the stage, for the risk, and for the check size that we've deployed. And so for us, it was much more about articulating that we are growing the pie size. We are going to invest in companies that are probably 2 to 3 years ahead of where the market thinks it's going to go. We are also going to be investing at a point in the stage where we can still secure a certain amount of ownership or equity in these companies for our check size. And we have built a platform that can support these type of founders. And certainly as you go from fund one to fund two, you start to have a few proof points. We've had more companies go to YC than any where else in our portfolio, right? Is the most common co-investor that we have after our investment. We've had founders raise from tier one VCs numerous times over. And it started to show and articulate that there was a population of founders that were going overlooked and that we were serving. And ultimately, as anything in investing would want, is we were getting deal flow that no one else was getting. And so all of a sudden, we are not competing for deal flow, and we can win deal flow that others may want had they just looked. And so a lot of that is kind of a narrative around finding arbitrage in the market and being willing to go before anyone else.
That's pretty awesome. Can I ask, how long did that take to prove out the that narrative and secure the trust?
I think we're still on it. honestly, while I think we have a sense for what we're doing and how it's working, I think we have a team that has a chip on their shoulder that believes we still have a lot more to prove. And I think that keeps the hustle alive, right? We have to, you never want to bet on the ambition of an immigrant. We're kind of the same mindset. Don't bet against us because we got a lot more to prove.
Got it. I remember you just said, right, that, you know, the rest of your team is three other women. It started with you and another founding partners, and then you added on a third one, right? How did you guys decide that you needed a third GP?
Yeah, so the team is two men, four women today. And, you know, when Nitin and I started, the two founding GPs are two men. I'm native born. Nitin was born in India. And, you know, Maria was one of our very first hires that we ever made, and certainly our first investment hire. And, you know, we hired her, I think, right out of college, out of UC Berkeley. And her story is one that I think it's really embodies that the spirit of pursuing the American dream. She came to the U.S. as a Colombian refugee. She had to fight her way to get to UC Berkeley. She grew up in Orlando and really just, you know, found her stripes or stride by really asking more questions and learning as fast as possible. And so in a way, it shouldn't be very surprising that she brought that same lifelong goal of learning and educating into the role at Unshackled. And so over the course of 5+ years, what we saw was an incredible growth rate in learning and maturity, and honestly, just earning respect from founders, VCs, and our LPs. So much of the job at a partnership level is about operation strategy and also brand building. And I don't think there's a more credible rising star in the venture ecosystem than Maria. I recognize I am very partial to that. But I think we're very blessed in a lot of ways to have convinced her coming out of college to join us. And then, you know, very, very fortunate that she stuck with us all the way through to the point of becoming a partner. So making her a partner was probably the easiest decision we've made, just because it was so obvious. And I guess it goes back to one of the things we've always said is best to hire, and I steal this from a YC founder, but it's best to hire for the slope rather than the Y axis, right? And so I think Maria shows that she's got a very steep learning curve and represented by her slope.
Awesome. We're almost toward the end. So we always wrap up with rapid fire questions. How can we help you change the world? How can people, the audience here that listening, because there's quite a few here that actually stay the whole time.
Honestly, let us enable you. Our job is customer service, and the more customers we can serve, the more likely we're going to change the world. And so let us back you, let us support you, and let us help you build your company and to make the world a little better.
Thank you. So where can we find you if people want to reach out to you? I know there's a website already.
Yeah, you can go to the website. You can fill out the form. We'll see it. As I mentioned, three members of our team will see it and respond to you within 10 days. All of us respond to cold emails. We respond to the best we can to LinkedIn requests, to the best we can to Twitter DMs. But certainly the guaranteed response will be through the online form.
Great. So just to wrap up the section, just had a few quick questions for you. Really interested in understanding, you know, what is one of the biggest trends or thesis you're personally tracking at the moment?
There's a lot, right? You know, for me, I'm personally really fascinated by the healthcare industry and the transformation that we're getting, specifically as digital health changed for the better in 2020. I think the pandemic accelerated a lot of it. I think there's a lot of bloat in the industry. And so that to me is obviously very interesting. I'm also really fascinated by the future of work in ed tech. I spent a few years in ed tech and have been waiting for the world to change the way our kids learn. And to me, that's going to be really impactful. And then finally, I'm honestly really excited about all things that serve women as the primary consumer audience. Women make up more than 50% of the population in the world, and they've probably received no more than 1 or 2% of the products. And so I think there's a huge opportunity in that. I'll admit I have a 7-month-old daughter, and so that certainly has amplified my desire for that. But I think there's a huge opportunity there.
Awesome. What's the best experiment you've personally ran or have seen so far? And what's the biggest one that has failed for yourself?
Oh, the best experiment so far is Unshackled. it's been 7 years in the making. And I can't think of a better one that I keep on having to rewrite the thesis for. And I love it. In terms of something that probably didn't work, I think my experiment of trying to play college baseball at UCLA, that was a good experiment that didn't play out. But, maybe it all worked out for the better.
And finally, you know, if you did have that magical wand we're all looking for, what would you change? What do you want to see changed?
Way more day zero capital in the market to give more entrepreneurs, and not just venture entrepreneurs, but even small and medium businesses capital. There's so much money. The M2 supply is at an all-time high. Cost of capital is so low, but yet it doesn't seem to find everyday people well enough. And I think the country is a lot better when all boats rise. So that would be my hope.
Yes, I love it. When the tides rise, all boats rise. Thank you so much for all of that. Thank you so much for sharing all that learning here too. I don't know if there's any last word that you want to share with us, Manan.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you. One of the things that the ethos of Unshackled will always be is built around customer service. And if there's ever an opportunity to serve our customer better, and there's feedback on how we can do it better, we'd welcome the community to kind of help us do that. But more than anything else, I want to say thank you for giving us a platform to share what we do, and hopefully we can collaborate more often.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. I don't know, Lauren, if you have something to add?
No, I think this is great. I mean, love to pick your brain more on, you know, LPs and that side of the house, perhaps on another talk.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys.